Welcome to The Great 80s, The Great 80s Movie Debate, where we see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. Whether you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. Today we'll be discussing 1980's The Blues Brothers, directed by John Landis and starring John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, and Carrie Fisher. My name is Dave, and I am joined by an illustrious panel of 80s experts, including Christy.
Think!
That's all I got.
Dan.
How's it going?
And Hampton.
Yeah!
Well, on The Great 80s, we like to take a moment to find out each panelist's history with the film we're analyzing so everyone can see where we're coming from. So, Christy, what is your history with The Blues Brothers?
My history with Blues Brothers fills the corner of one piece of chewing gum wrapping paper. I did not see this movie ever.
What?
Of all the years.
Wait.
That I've never seen this movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's...
No, I have never seen this
movie. Wait. I feel like I've just been sabotaged.
I'd see it as I walk through the different various parts of rooms, and I've seen it on. I've seen it in pieces.
Yeah.
I've seen it on Best Of, like when they do like best musical scenes and different. I've seen it in snippets. So it's like I've had the YouTube version of the movie. But today was the first day I saw the
movie. Okay.
So you you've rectified it. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
I wouldn't go on the show without seeing it.
Well, I'm just making sure.
No. I did see it, but I do not have previous
knowledge.
Experience.
So she's a rookie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fresh set of eyes.
A noob.
2017 eyes for an 80s movie.
Yes. That's
pretty neat.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, you got another set of them because I never saw it before this either.
Wow.
What?
So you have popped our Blues Brothers cherry.
Wow.
You're welcome.
I wasn't even here for it.
Nah, sorry.
That's... Well,
by proxy?
Yeah. What?
So, Dan, what is your history with the Blues Brothers?
Up until well over a decade ago, I was the same way. I'd only seen it in snippets until things got serious in my professional career when I had to start performing musical numbers from the film and albums and stuff like that. So then I had sat down and really started to study it pretty intensely. So I would say 2004 was the first time that I saw it the whole way through.
Okay. And what about you, Hampton? You sound surprised.
I am sitting here judging the hell out of all of you right now. This is terrible. This is terrible. I am the youngest person in this room.
You are.
I am 32 years old, and I have seen this movie probably more times than I can count. I can't count very high. But when I was a kid, this was probably the first movie that was rated R that I was allowed to see. And I watched it with my dad. And I carried the lyrics around to every song. I had a notebook. I had the script in it. And I had every song, all the lyrics, and the tablatures. Just carried it with me. No reason.
Now, where did you acquire those?
The internet. Huh? The good old-fashioned internet. I believe it was Mike's Movie Rama or something like that. Mike's Scriptorama.com probably doesn't even exist anymore. Mm-hmm. I printed it out on a printer that had the
dot
holes
matrix
on the side. Yeah, dot matrix. Yeah. Yeah, that's how old it was.
So, may the Schwartz be with you.
You're an
Did
idiot.
Did you print it out on a Commodore 64?
I don't think it was a Commodore. I don't think we ever had a Commodore 64. But yeah, so I've seen it ever, like, man. Probably since I was 6 or 7.
But when was the first time you
probably
saw
like
it?
6 or 7 or 8. Right. Something like that. And that was probably the TV version.
Mm-mm.
You know. But,
right.
You know.
There's
on
a lot that needs to be edited out of this. As they say the F-word a couple
of
times.
But there is. There's a lot. There's a lot of cursing in the film. Mm-hmm.
It's not as bad as the Snakes on a Plane version.
No. But there are, I'm sure this will all come out like in the wash here, but like there are some actually questions that could be answered in the unedited version that we've seen. So,
okay.
You mean the director's cut thing? Yeah. Yeah.
We're talking to a couple experts here, so this will be good.
Mm-hmm.
Now with you guys performing a lot of Blues Brothers songs, do you feel like you spent a lot of time then not just rehearsing the music, but also studying the film?
Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah, didn't need to. I've seen it so much. I mean, probably getting the characterizations down and things like that. That's what I use the movie for. But I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure we might touch on this, their most famous song, Soul Man, was not even in the movie.
Right.
So, and you probably didn't realize that until today.
Actually, I did know that piece because was from Saturday Night Live.
Yep. Yes. Yes. They did.
Because that was on one of those snippet shows.
For the film. So, but yeah, I definitely feel like the movie influenced how I perform certain things to an extent.
Of course. Yeah.
Now, do you feel like every time you see the movie that you find something new? Or do you feel like you have watched it to the deepest extent you can?
Because we talk about this often. I haven't watched it recently.
I have.
Have you?
Yeah. Well, yeah. My 2.5-year-old.
Yeah, that's right.
My 2.5-year-old the other day, did you see the video? Because I posted it. We're friends.
I didn't see it.
Yeah. I pulled out my camera because she said it more than once. She just looks at me and goes, Daddy, I want to watch the Blues Brothers. And I was like, the what? And she's like, the Blues Brothers. Uncle Danny. Mm-hmm. You. I want to see you and Uncle Danny. So we watched it like 3 times in a row. She would not let me put anything else on. And this is a 2.5-year-old girl who does nothing but watch Mickey Mouse.
That's pretty damn cool.
It is pretty damn cool. So, and she even had sunglasses on the whole time.
Aww.
She was doing the dances and then the church scene where he does the backflips. She's like, go, Daddy, go. So that's my big ending right there is that it's still making an impact on my life, you know,
that's great.
The most recent viewing. So
cool. That is really cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the movie a little bit here. And I'm sure if you guys, anything that pops up, because at this point you are, I mean, it's clear you're the experts and Christy and I don't know shit. So you got to jump in there whenever you feel like it. But I didn't realize, we had talked with Kelly, who is an expert on Chicago. And when we did Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I didn't realize how heavy Chicago weighs in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It is like another character.
It's like the third brother.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. It's the third brother.
Have you guys been to Chicago and maybe there's got to be a tour. There's got to be a Blues Brothers tour.
I've never been on it. I'm sure there is one. I know that when the prison was defunct, you could go visit that. Okay. But I know they had a fire recently.
Mm-hmm.
Were part of the prison burned down or all of it? I don't even know.
A part of it caught on fire. The mall is no longer there too, but that was recent. That was like 2013.
2013, yeah.
That the what was it called? Whatever the name of the mall was, but
the mall.
It had come down. They finally had to tear that down, but
because they had destroyed so much of it.
Well, yeah, they had bought the mall.
Yeah, the mall was abandoned, which is the whole reason why they had so much fun filming it, no doubt. So, but I've only been to the Chicago airport because I don't travel a lot.
Right.
Well, I've been to the House of Blues in Chicago, so yes. I win.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, it was very cool.
I've seen the movie Chicago.
Christy wins.
Yay.
Does Christy she?
Loses. Does she?
No, yeah, no, that's, yeah, that's a loss right
you
there.
You won in a losing kind of way.
Christy had to watch Richard Gere sing. She loses. But it does open with the Joliet Correctional Facility. I thought it was cool because I am a huge, I didn't see the movie, but I'm a huge fan of R&B music and soul music and stuff like that. That the first credit in the movie is the music,
mm-hmm.
which I think is kind of appropriate for this movie. But it opens with the correctional facility with Jake Blues being released. And I guess one of John Landis's trademarks is putting other directors in his movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Christy, what are you thinking about as soon as you see Frank Oz? Because you didn't know he was in it. I didn't know he was either.
I wrote it down.
Really?
That was the first thing I wrote down right under choreographer Carlton Johnson because I just kept thinking of the Carlton.
Nope.
And I was like, this isn't why the Carlton is called the Carlton. I don't know why that was called.
Oh.
But yeah, if he pulled out a piggy somewhere out of that.
Do you have this in a Miss Piggy? I've always loved that line. Sorry.
I'm just amazed at how the entire suit, knowing how big those suits are, fit in that tiny little box.
Yeah.
There's kind of a lot of that in the film, though. That's like kind of almost like a running gag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was reading some of the other trivia just about Belushi and how many pairs of sunglasses he lost.
Yep, he's called the Black Hole. That's what like they called him. Yeah, they called him the Black Hole.
Yeah, he lost hundreds of pairs, right?
Yeah, that's the legend. Legend has it.
Actually, I don't want to throw it away from the film for too long, but for just a second, there are Saturday Night Live clips where he's wearing women's sunglasses, yep. brown hats.
Aviators.
Yeah, there was performances when they were on stage that they were wearing aviators. So
He had a tendency of taking a lot of backstage breaks, let's put it that way, and sitting things down.
Misplacing things and then just grabbing whatever could work.
Yep.
I was just amazed at the fact that, and I don't know why I was paying attention to this detail, but when they're putting the sunglasses on, the sunglasses are brown.
Yeah, they're tortoiseshell.
Jake's are, yeah.
Yeah, Jake's are tortoiseshell.
I did not realize
that. And we've run into that where people call me out sometimes and be like, why aren't you wearing black ones? Well, let me tell you a story. I don't wear black ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you a story. I'm right and you're wrong.
Pretty much, yeah.
We always used to say you have to get up very early in the morning to best us at Blues Brothers.
Yeah, you would think so. The contents of the box, I think, was the first laugh that I got out of the movie with the condoms.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Great joke.
Yeah.
And it's a great intro that builds instant interest with Elwood waiting outside and the reunited. Now, I had to look at this because I didn't know. This all came about, obviously, because of Saturday Night Live. But at this point, they were both off of Saturday Night Live, weren't they?
No.
I thought at this point they were both off.
It was filmed in 79. So the first season of Saturday Night Live was 75. Dan did 5 seasons, I want to say.
Okay. Maybe just this
it might have been at the tail end of SNL for them.
I would imagine that John would have dropped SNL after Animal House.
Probably Animal House.
Yeah. Maybe it was just Belushi then that they were off. But when this was on Saturday Night Live, because I mean, you can see some of these, this was never intended to be too comedic. It was just like, it was about the music, wasn't it, when it was on Saturday Night Live?
Very much so. And a lot of that came from Dan Aykroyd. That was Dan's biggest contribution to it. He was a huge fan of blues and rhythm and blues. He had a club in Toronto called the 505, which was a legit speakeasy. And that's where I think the seed was really planted in their heads for it when they were listening to Down Child Blues Band's Straight Up album.
Yep.
And he was educating John in blues, John being because, from Chicago.
And John really liked metal.
Yeah.
John was always more a metal guy.
But Dan Aykroyd was really he knows a lot about his blues history.
Well, he knows a lot about a lot.
Yeah.
Dude's smart.
So from our understanding and from what we've read and have seen and all that stuff, that they wanted this to be legit music. We might be two funny guys on television, but we wanted this. The music had to be real. It had to be right. And they initially wanted to be musical performers on SNL.
Right.
Not just like a sketch. Shtick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was why the first time they performed, they put on the B suits and kind of played it more sticky. So that probably had a lot to do with it.
It's clear based on the people that they end up having in the band that they were serious about this. And we'll get to talk about some of these guys as we go on. They have a brief discussion in the car about the Bluesmobile and the story's pretty much underway. Mm-hmm. Jake promised he'd visit the nun at the orphanage.
The penguin.
And those little, I don't know what you want to call them, religious little sight gags here and there
are
excellent. The door closing behind them, the Jesus, you know, woman.
My daughter is afraid of that Jesus.
Everyone's afraid of that Jesus.
No, legit, the first time we watched it the other day, she goes, ugh, gross. And I was like, well, you ain't wrong, kid.
It's intense.
Yeah.
The take-home message, Jesus is creepy.
Yeah, okay. Creepy. Creepy bloody guy hanging on a stick.
He's always watching.
Is he?
He's like Rockwell.
Yeah.
I hope he's not listening.
Nah.
Yeah, no.
The woman that is the nun, and I'm in the, like, Christine, I hadn't seen this before. I recognize her instantly from Dragnet. Dan Aykroyd also wrote and was obviously in the woman. She, like, I love it when directors and actors and they get these little people back all the time. And that woman had a brief role in Dragnet.
Is it Kathleen Freeman?
Yeah.
Is that her name? Kathleen Freeman. Yeah.
And, but you know, they have to get $5,000 to save the orphanage. They can't get it illegally because they're doing it for Jesus.
Yep. Don't want your filthy stolen money. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they must redeem themselves. And you get your first of many, many legendary, I don't even want to call them, I mean, their roles. Like the Cab Calloway is a blues brother, really, isn't he?
He's a blues father.
Yeah. He's more their dad than anything.
Yeah, like...
Right. Yeah, I don't want to call them cameos because they're roles.
Yeah, they are.
Because they need churching up.
Mm-hmm.
And that sends them to one of the... I think one of the bigger set pieces is that church scene with James Brown.
Yeah, the Triple Rock.
And for now, I read, and you guys would know more, there are a couple people that could not lip sync, and James Brown was one of them.
That's right.
Yep. But the choir lip synced.
Yeah, they did. Shaka Khan, she appears, she would have, I would say, had a cameo.
Yeah.
Shaka Khan is the featured choir singer. So, yeah, but she's backing tracked. But James Brown was, he was live, man.
Yeah. Never the same twice.
He just couldn't do it. He just had to do it live. And it's, I mean, it's kind of, maybe it's better that way too, because it's James Brown.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about that scene is, although James is singing live, that was outside of the brothers' choreography, that was when the group choreography. That's the scene that they finally decided to do that in. That scene was shot later on in production, and they were like, okay, if we're going back to having multiple people dancing, we're bringing in dancers, we're going to make this a little bit more polished. Hmm. So that's probably, and to me, that lends it to being such a monumental moment for not only what happens on film, but then what happens in the story.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and this is really, this scene, more, it kind of wets your whistle for what you're going to be sitting through. It's one of the first instances of this movie being a love letter to good R&B and soul music.
Mm-hmm.
And gospel music, too. I mean, like, all of that style of music. And I knew that was that. Christy, did you know that this was going to be peppered with this much, like, full-on musical set pieces?
Yes. That I did know, because I've seen clips.
John Landis considered this a musical.
I would agree. Yeah. There is,
I don't.
There's not, maybe not in the traditional sense of a musical, but there is, that you could probably take less than, it's probably less than maybe 10 minutes in the movie that doesn't have something behind it.
And not just that, but like even a song like The Old Landmark, which is a song that James Brown sings in the church, progresses the plot.
Mm-hmm.
So just what happens in musicals.
See, I consider it a film with music, with musical performance. I don't consider it a musical at all.
Mm. You say potato.
I say potato. Get it right.
Well, Elwood gets pulled over for driving with a suspended license, and you get the first time of the famous line. I'll let you guys say it.
We're on a mission from God.
God. You got to say that cool like, little accent at the end. How many times did they say it? They say like five times? I stopped counting.
It's multiple. Yeah. It happens quite
often. Quite often.
Yes.
It's a good drinking game.
Yeah. Make the drinks really big, I guess, because if it's only five, then you're not really going to be drinking that much.
It tapers off towards the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once they're in the clear, once they get the band back together and they're off on the next portion of the mission.
Right. Well, you're giving away the plot. Way to go, dummy.
We can digress. It's okay.
I digress. She said I could.
This is full of spoilers. It just, you know.
If you haven't seen them, well, you didn't see it till today. Yeah. I was going to say it came out in 1980. Come on. What's the statute of limitation on this?
It's there's not many people like Christy and I.
No. Most people have already seen it, but...
Sure. But there is the mall chase, and the total I saw was 103 cars demolished.
Throughout
the course of the film. And there's all kinds of other cool stories about Belushi. Apparently, he would wander off.
Yeah.
Yep.
There was a lot of cocaine being done, I guess. And
yeah.
Yeah, there's that. Yep.
He would wander off, and one time Aykroyd found him in some guy's house.
Yeah, made a sandwich and slept on the couch.
America's guest.
Yep.
Yeah. So these stories
nickname.
Add to the legend of, and to me, it must have been a riot to work on. It took 6 months. That was a long shoot, kind of. I guess because of the stunts.
I guess it was fun because there was a budget for cocaine. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah, Aykroyd has admitted they had a budget written into it for
cocaine.
That's why,
because I read recently they came in $10 million over budget.
Yeah, I'm sure, because Belushi's a black hole of cocaine.
So yeah, it's making sense now.
It's all coming together.
I will have to say that, okay, now this is going to seem weird and dorky, but...
I really like cocaine. No, you're such a dork.
Shucks. I wrote down one of my things that I noted is Captain Fuller from 21 Jump Street is in this movie. I don't know what it is from the original. Johnny Depp, Peter DeLuise.
Who does he play in this?
He's the African-American cop. That for, when they first
I'm gonna catch that sucker if it's the last thing I ever do.
I just kept going, it's Captain Fuller. It's Captain Fuller.
That's funny.
I don't know why. That just kind of got me.
I just know him as Black Mustache Cop. That's what his name is.
Now, I started thinking about this, especially during this mall thing. Are there people, like you guys had this interesting discussion on whether or not this is a musical. Are there a lot of people that think this is really more of an action movie than a comedy?
I've never thought of it that way.
Yeah,
either.
I've never thought of it as an action
There's
film either.
There's a lot of action in
there. There is. Well, there is a lot of action.
I know that even Aykroyd, I believe, himself has a problem categorizing this film. It's comedy, it's drama, it's action, it's musical. It's, to an extent, sci-fi. Yeah. In the original script, the car has superpowers.
Well, the car does have superpowers.
Well, it does have superpowers, but they explain it. Yeah. That he parks it underneath this thing, and it gives it... Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, there's an element of kind of everything in this film. So, it can be argued that it's all genres. Multi-genred.
It's like a multi-sphere that every place you look at it, you see a different angle.
It's got something for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, it's also got Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Who starts her, I don't know, stalking of Jake.
Who is that girl?
She doesn't have a name, does she?
She's called the Mystery Girl.
Yeah, I believe that's what she's credited as.
She got the rocket launcher later, the flamethrower. Yeah. And she was engaged to Aykroyd at this time.
She was.
Is that right?
That's right.
Yep. And Belushi's the one that set them up.
Nice. Yeah. And did it have something to do with her choking on something and Aykroyd saved her life?
Yeah, I guess that they were out on, I don't know if it was their first date or ended up being their last date before they got engaged. But yeah, he gave her the Heimlich and immediately asked her if she would be his wife. Yep, that is what has been said. I think Carrie wrote about it in one of her books.
How could she say no? He just saved her life.
Yeah, right. You owe me.
How could she say no? He invented the Bass-O-Matic.
Because Donna Dixon was out there the whole time.
Oh. And John Candy. I had no idea John Candy was even in this.
Surprise. Yep.
Orange Whip.
Yeah, that was a great line. I looked that up too. That was improv.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. We can get into some facts about the original script, but I wouldn't know if that was actually...
Well, and that goes back to the first question. When's the last time you saw the original version of the movie? Yeah. Because every time I watch it, it's the extended two-and-a-half-hour long version. Mm-mm-mm. So, I don't remember what's in what.
What did you watch, Christy?
I think mine was 2 hours.
Yeah, mine was 2:14. It said it was the original version.
Yeah.
Yeah, the orange whip thing they said was... something that was being served on the set to the crew, and they just sat down and Candy just said it.
That's like, awesome.
It was kind of an in joke as far as like the crew, and they left it in. That's so
I've always wondered what an orange whip actually is.
I think it's like a Dole Whip.
Like a Dole Whip. Dole Whip. Now say Dole.
Dole.
Now say whip. 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 You're eating hair.
But they're going to get the band back together, and the first stop is Murphy and the Magic Tones.
Yeah, Murph and the Magic Tones.
Murph and the Magic Tones.
These dudes are like all-timers, right? They're from Booker T and the MGs. These are like the Stax Records studio musicians.
Yes, especially Steve the Colonel Cropper and Donald Duck Dunn. Willie Too Big Hall was with them because he's still in Tennessee. Murph, though, it was... not originally supposed to be in the film.
No, originally their keyboardist was Paul Schaefer.
Yeah, he was the music director for everything.
And Belushi fired him, basically.
He worked on, he was under contract to do Gilda Radner's album.
Right.
And so contractually he couldn't do it, but then Belushi came out and said that, yeah, no, he's done. He's not going to be a brother anymore.
It's like the Rolling Stones, like
kind of.
Yeah, they like you're a Rolling Stone or you're not. It took Ron Wood like 30 years to be considered a real Rolling Stone.
He just kept showing up auditioning, right?
Yeah, really. I guess after 30 years, we'll let you call yourself a Rolling Stone. It's cool though. Mm-hmm. These guys are like all timers. I know these guys. In fact, I saw one on YouTube. It wasn't that long ago. They're still playing. Have you ever seen these guys?
They have an album coming out. They Cropper, Tom Malone, Blue Lou. Those are the only surviving members from like the film or the album. McIntyre Murphy's on it, but they have an album called the Original Blues Brothers Band that's coming out in October.
And Cropper announced the other day that this is his last tour with the Blues Brothers Band. Mm-hmm. So they're playing in Europe, I believe, right now.
That's great. And then they follow that by getting Mr. Fabulous at the French restaurant.
Did you notice the name of the restaurant?
What Shea was
the
Paul.
Name? The Shea Paul. Paul
for Paul Schaefer.
That's cool. I did not notice that. And Paul Rubens as the waiter. That dinner scene, is that what a lot of people consider maybe the funniest scene in the movie?
It's up there for me.
I know I was laughing more in that scene than others.
I like the shrimp bit.
Yeah, the shrimp bit.
And
the,
how much for your women, your wife, your little girl? I want to buy them, sell them to children.
but like, there's a lot of comedy in that scene. I never really looked at it that way. I guess I was too busy studying eyebrows and things like that. but like the whole wrong glass, sir.
Yeah. You know. Do you guys feel like when you were and still do study this that you can't just sit down and watch it for enjoyment? Are you still able to enjoy it, or is this like you're studying it too much?
I think for me, I was studying it too much, and that's why I haven't watched it in a long time. I was dangerously close to it.
Yeah, right. Same here. I probably hadn't, like, aside from the last week when I watched it, it's probably been years.
If my kids sat down and asked me to watch it, I would watch it.
Oh, yeah.
But like, I don't think there's been a time in the last 4 to 6 months that I've been like, you know what I'm going to do tonight?
Right.
I'm going to sit down and watch the Blues Brothers.
No. No.
Yeah. I that when you said that, I kind of thought like at some point when you do what you're doing as far as, you know, performing these songs and stuff like that, it does become more of a job and less of like, I used to like this movie. Like, do you feel like you used to like it more, or is that not the case?
There was definitely a period where it was thrilling still to watch. And what's nice about being able to take those breaks is it will once again be thrilling. But I have never sat down and watched it and been like, why the hell am I watching this? I don't want to do this. I've always enjoyed it and I've always seen it through. If I'm ever rolling through channels on the TV and it's on, I watch it.
Right.
So
yeah,
it's like your Revenge of the Nerds for that's my movie.
Or my Star Wars.
Yes.
Star.
Well, then there's a Nazi rally and
that's
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Henry Gibson.
Yes.
Kind of topical and strange that we're watching it now, but
I won't say that.
Followed by John Lee Hooker.
Yeah. And
that was not
a Nazi, by the way. Yes, not there you go. A Nazi.
I have to do this as a intense fan of blues music and blues harmonica. Not just John Lee Hooker. I didn't know this until even just a couple of years ago, but a very famous Chicago blues harmonica, Big Walter Horton, is the harmonica player in John's band there on Maxwell Street.
Oh, cool.
So there's a cameo. There's another role I would say is considered cameoed.
Yeah, I bet there's a lot of people in this movie that guys like you would know, or guys that are, you know, in the industry and big, big fans would, that are celebrities to them, that when Christy and I watch this, they're like, yeah, you know, there's John Lee Hooker. I'm sure those other guys are somebody too, but you guys and a lot of people do know who these guys are.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It just reinforces the whole love letter to blues. Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
Especially to the city of Chicago, because that's where Big Walter is, like, that's where he made his name.
It's kind of like, we did Who Framed Roger Rabbit a little while ago, and that was a love letter to voiceover and cartoons mm-hmm. of the past. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like I'm starting to notice that there may be a pattern of watching these movies that are really love letters to the past, and a lot of opportunities that these being filmed in the 80s, they're all still alive. Mm-hmm. And now you look at it, you know, 30 years later, 40 years later.
And we're on a podcast giving a love letter to
the love, a love letter.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like the mirror looking
so
at itself.
So meta.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm
glad
using that
I'm
right,
glad but. We all took this turn on the world together, man. That was fun.
At the Soul Food Cafe, they're there to get Matt Guitar Murphy. And what is Elwood's infatuation with toast?
That's a good question.
That is a very good question, and one that only I'm certain Dan Aykroyd could answer. Yeah. It's just... Maybe
he likes the smell of toast.
Toast smells good.
Toast smells great.
Man.
Why wouldn't you like
but
the smell
it
of toast?
But it usually smells better when you put butter on it, and he takes his dry.
You know who doesn't like the smell of toast? Nazis.
Especially Illinois ones.
Illinois Nazis.
dry white toast is all he wants. Even when they're at the instrument or buying the instruments, and stuff, he's at the toaster.
That's right, man. He's got to make. Well, if you
checking out the new
scene
models.
In his apartment when he brings Jake to his apartment,
he's making toast
just over like an electric burner with like a wire hanger all bent up. So it's like, you know, if you're in a place where you got a piece of bread, you need it toasted, you're at a used appliance place, you might as well check out the goods, man.
And hey, I got this bread in my pocket. Might as well toast it.
He seems to have never ending supply of bread in his pocket.
Which is cool. Which brings me, I will call back to the digging the suit out of the box. It almost appears to me, Elwood is he's got this tiny fraction of Harpo Marx in him. Mm-hmm. Harpo always had something that everyone needed in that trench coat mm-hmm. of his. Elwood seems between the briefcase, his pockets and all this is always what you need, you know,
kind of like my mom's purse. Do I need to stick a gum?
Mary Poppins bag.
Oh, yep.
Captain that's Caveman. What I think of.
Well, this is the first of two pretty quick musical set pieces. One in the diner with Aretha Franklin doing Think, followed by Ray Charles in the music shop doing. Is that called? That's called Shake a Tail Feather, right?
It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys, in watching this, and then there's two here, we've already talked about some, there's more to come. Do you have a favorite musical set piece in the film?
I really like Tail Feather.
I think Tail Feather is like one of the most iconic movie scenes.
And but it's introed so well with Murph being like, there's no action left on this piano.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with the action in this piano.
And then when he sits down and just, it totally Ray Charles it.
Yeah.
And then to have the band fall in with him, it was a well written song to begin with, and then when they put it in Ray Charles's hands, it just became he's a genius.
And then coming from like a directing standpoint, one of my favorite shots of the entire film is in that scene, and it's Ray playing the keys, and it's just a real tight shot on his glasses, and you see the reflection of the piano in both lenses, and it's such a really cool shot. I was thinking about that when I watched that with Mac the other day.
It is very cool. Do you have a favorite, Christy, of any of the songs?
Because
that's my favorite as well. The song's great to begin with, and it's like coupled with the dancing. I mean, their choreography is actually really good, and they do it really well.
That's what that number, because all of the dancers out in the street and up on the L, even if you look in the back on the elevated train, they have people dancing up there. Those are not professionals. Those are just extras that they were kind of like shoving into this and teaching them it as they go. And they realized that this is problematic and it's not working out the best way that we want it. So that's why they hired all these professionals for the church scene.
Yeah.
I would have to say I agree with that too. It's just the... Not necessarily my favorite, but not because it's a musical. My favorite is always Rawhide, but that's just
me.
But that's not because of
there can be an argument for every song.
I
mean, for me, the classic ending scene of Everybody and Sweet Home
concert. Yeah,
yeah. The big ultimate end of the movie is my personal favorite, but I think most iconic would be Tail Feather.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, and Christy already mentioned it because their first gig then is at this country bar.
Bob's Country Bunker.
We have country and Western.
We got both kinds of music.
And the good old boys. What happened to the good old boys that they're so late? Did they say?
No, it's never said. And like anyone who's in the professional musical world, it wonders that all the time that is just absolutely ridiculous.
I think it's just because they're rednecks and they're like, you know, we'll get there when we get there, y'all.
I don't think
they were
that's
never
it.
Meaning no harm, you know.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, like there was a hurry up when they got off the Winnebago. It's yeah. Sorry, man, I'm real late. I gotta go. You know, he's like, everyone's already gone. Like it's after two at least. They've closed.
Yeah,
they're putting the chairs up.
I mean, they did. There's one of the band members says, and I think it's Alan Rubin. He was like, "All right, we've been driving for a few hours. Where is this place?" You know. Yeah. So I mean, you could argue maybe they got lost because they're in the middle of the backwoods.
Yeah, but it is never explained.
It is never explained.
Yeah.
Maybe they were off being good old boys.
I like this Blues Brothers retconning though. This is good. Like Blues Brothers fan fiction, I think, is on the way. The extended universe of Blues Brothers.
When you get close to the movie, that's what you get.
Yeah. And you know what? It's probably somewhere in Aykroyd's original script because that thing was like 300 pages long. Yeah. And I guess a page is 1 minute of film.
Yeah.
And this was his first screenplay, so he didn't know. And he just wrote like 300 pages. So I'm sure it's like, well, the good old boys were late because they were shearing sheep, helping this farmer that they passed by and being rednecks that they are. It's probably something stupid.
Well, they're very late, and because of it, the Blues Brothers get to do the Rawhide theme, which is, I think it was very, like, that's the first thing they go to as far as being a country song. They don't know anything else. And Stand By Your Man.
Yeah. But you're right. Like, that kind of like, we better think of something these guys like and fast, you know, Rawhide.
Yeah,
you know?
Give me a mountain tempo and A.
And, you were asking about the restaurant scene at Shea Paul being funny. For me, one of the funniest moments is, so they're doing Give Me Some Lovin' to a bunch of rednecks.
For a whole hot 10 seconds
of it. And they're throwing beers at them because they don't like it.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden they kick into Rawhide and they start throwing beers at them because they like it. And so I always
they
enjoyed
probably
that.
They threw
it was
more bottles. Yeah.
I always thought that was very, very funny.
It's I kept having flashbacks of Roadhouse.
Yeah. Roadhouse. Mm-hmm. Roadhouse.
Yeah, Jeff Healy up there. And
yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking too.
Roadhouse.
Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome.
And they make 200, but they drink 300.
Yeah. You drank $300 worth of beer, god damn it.
Well, we'll just go out and take a collection from
the band. Pencil.
And they do have to go. And Charles Napier is the lead of the good old boys. And he always gets me when he pops up and stuff.
Tucker McElroy.
With arguably like one of the greatest one-liners of the whole film.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to look pretty silly. You're going to look pretty silly.
Corn on the cob with no fucking teeth. Stein, is it?
There are a lot of little jokes. There's jokes like that because there were times that I wasn't laughing too much. But like we've already kind of talked about this. It's a time in musical. It's a time in action movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're always supposed to be laughing. But when they would put a joke in there, I was laughing. The Ray Charles putting the poster upside down.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is really, really a great joke.
It is. And I'm so glad. Well, at least I hope that they told him about it. either way, it's still funny. But like, if
that's a very good point.
Because like, it's Landis would do something like that. He'd be like,
it'd be funny if that was just him doing it, like for real.
But they were like, here, tell Ray to put this poster up, but don't tell him it's upside down.
Don't tell him it's upside down.
I have a feeling Landis would do that.
I have a feeling that Ray Charles would be like, hey, I want to put it upside down.
There were very good temperaments on this film that would probably...
We're talking... We'll keep going down the plot because I'm having fun doing that, but pork, which is what Hampton and I say to each other to try to remember something
pork.
To say.
Pork.
To go back to the camaraderie of everyone that was on set and all the different guest appearances.
Indeed. Yeah.
And that is probably a big credit to Landis, that he's able to corral... huge mega superstars in music and somebody with a personality like Belushi and get all these people together and make it work. So Landis probably deserves a lot of credit for that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they're going to the palace because they are going to do this big show where they're going to get the money and they run out of gas.
Yeah.
Oh, we're out of gas. Tanker truck's late. It's always late on Tuesdays.
Yeah. Why was Twiggy somebody, like, I know she was a model and stuff, but what's her deal with Twiggy? Like, why was she
featured
in this?
Why not Twiggy? Yeah. Why ask why?
You know, we have this mysterious woman that clearly wants to take Jake off the earth. Why can't Elwood have...
Why can't he have a little love, too,
just a little
man?
Fondness, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, he ends up, spoiler alert, ditching her.
But for good reason.
Yeah, he's got to get the money back.
It is sweet that Twiggy does return.
Yeah.
She was waiting. Albeit to her heartbreak, but...
We'll see, Elwood.
And I love Elwood's style of flirting. You want I should wash the dead bugs off the windshield. Like this. But then also, like, she just, you know, can you fill it up with premium and check under the hood? And then when it's all done, how much will you? That'll be $94. Like, really? So Elwood's style, that whole thing, the stealing of the windshield wipers and belts when he comes out of the thing, and the checking on his brother, which is always something that I've always loved about Elwood. But that's such a, from the beginning and ending, when he goes, oh, we're out of gas. Because he even says right before that, he goes, okay, well, let's get to the gig. Elwood is running this ship, man. And it was kind of nice to watch him from the beginning of that scene through the end of that scene. Kind of, you get learned a lot about him in that, in those bits.
He does have a little thing. He's the kind of guy in this that you really have to, like, keep your eyes on him, because there are times that he'll be doing something even when he's not the featured person in the scene. Yeah. Like, that kind of performance keeps you watching it again and again. Like, if I watch this again and again, I think I'm going to watch him more than I did in my first viewing.
It's the straight man mentality.
Right.
And they never get the credit that they deserved. And they are, dare I say, more brilliant than the funny guy, than the guy that has to deliver the joke.
Yeah.
He's going to deliver it, man, if the straight guy don't set it up.
Exactly.
So...
I totally agree. They're on their way. Many of the people who are chasing them either want them dead or arrested.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the cops chasing them, Nazis chasing them, everyone's chasing them.
Princess Leia.
Yeah.
Princess Leia and her flamethrower.
Yeah. Missile launcher.
They're late, and Cab Calloway has to go on. He does his famous song. And I guess this, I read in the thing too that he wanted to do a different version.
He wanted
of it.
To do the disco
he had
version.
Just
that
released
was,
that
was
one.
Out, yeah. And Landis really pissed him off about it too.
Because he just wanted a better recording of the original.
That's what Landis wanted. Yeah.
And I guess for Cab, he was like, no, man, I put this out. It's almost like, you know, we put out a new single, let's take it on the road and promote it.
Right.
But they were like, no, that's not why we're doing this. This isn't what it's about. So. But apparently there were two takes. There was one Cab did of more in the original style. And when he got done, he asked John, he was like, well, what did you think? And he says, honestly, Cab, I thought it could have been better. And so he threw the cans back on and went and did it with a little bit more piss and vinegar. And that's the take that they used.
Yep.
So. Okay. Well, they do eventually get there and they start, this is again, I think, where I'm watching Aykroyd more than anything else. I guess you call it dancing. Is he dancing? What is he doing?
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, because any time that I've ever had to perform any of the numbers, people would be like, man, that was some great dancing. And I was like, I'd never have considered it dancing, ever. And anytime anyone would find out, oh, you've done that in a show, so you're a dancer. No, I'm definitely not a dancer.
No,
man.
You're definitely not a dancer, dude.
And this is where the closeness to the film comes is if you really break down a lot of the movements that the guys do, it's kind of running in place,
step touching.
Yeah. So it's
jumping,
not what I would call dancing. It is certainly wacky and a lot of fun, and it looks great
and tiring.
It is exhausting, but it is the furthest thing I would call from dancing.
Yeah. It's definitely not dancing. 100% not dancing.
Even when we're dancing together, I shouldn't use the word dancing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Unless you're cheek to cheek.
Yeah.
Well. Well.
Well, they get an advance from the recording studio, or the guy wants to make them an album and give them their big break, and they feel like they're on their way. They have to get out of there. Carrie Fisher's there again with a machine gun.
Yep.
Does she have GPS or LoJack on him or something? She finds him everywhere.
It's unexplained. Whoa, she has the force, doesn't she? She has the force.
Well, she has the force, and we are offensive smelling, so she could be tracking us.
Yeah.
You know, just thinking about
Follow your nose.
But like, how? The same question. Like, how does a young lady of that time period obtain a flamethrower
and a missile launcher
and an AK-47?
And yeah.
I mean, his script explains it.
It does.
It probably does. Yeah.
Probably does.
I'd like to get a hold of that, the original 300-page version.
He lost it once. I'm sure he lost it again.
Didn't he? As a joke too. The original script that he handed in a phone book.
Yes, he did.
And put it in a cover of a phone book.
And put it in a cover of a script. That's right. I mean, just these little stories about the making of this, mm-hmm. I found actually funnier than the movie. There was a lot of stuff going on off screen that was good. This scene with Carrie Fisher in the tunnel, is that other than the beginning when he's in prison, it's the only time he takes his sunglasses off.
Mm-hmm.
And Aykroyd never does, right?
Unless you watch the extended version. But he still has his eyes covered. He works in some kind of...
A glue factory.
With spray adhesives and stuff like that.
Spray adhesives.
He quits. He has to quit.
She's on tour with Ariana Grande.
Spray adhesive. Coming this fall. Spray adhesive.
I'm feeling weird, like I mispronounced it.
You did.
Adhesive?
What is it?
Spray
adhesive.
Oh, whatever.
He didn't even know.
I never claimed to be educated, so.
So there was this spray glue.
Yeah, spray glue. There was some sticky shit in a can. Anyway. When he goes into his boss, I'm going to move on because I'm actually used to these things happening in my life. He goes into his boss to put in his 2 weeks because he tells him he's going to become a priest.
You get severance if you do that.
And so he is wearing just clear eye protection. So you can see his eyes, but he is still wearing like eye protection.
It's good.
Adhesive. Shit.
I'm from Pittsburgh. We have the same pronunciation for hill, dill, mill, fill, all of those.
Yeah. I made a great dill on some dill pickles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I ate a mill at the mill.
Yeah.
This guy's an idiot.
I am.
He is my brother, though. That's true. And I love him.
Only one of us we're allowed to be smart.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing it's me. Christ.
What do you think is more famous line than the "We're on a mission from God" or the full line?
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I would say they're equal.
Okay. Yeah.
Because
it's definitely easier for people to just go, "Hey, I'm on a mission from God." And we're like, "Hey, we are too, buddy."
Yeah, in our history, we've too many people have messed up the 106 miles to Chicago.
It's 100 miles to Texas. We got cigarettes.
Everyone always adds beer. They always say we got a half a pack of beer. And everyone always goes, "We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, a six pack of beer."
Who's got time to drink when they're doing 120 in
lower Wacker Drive?
This is definitely lower Wacker Drive.
So, but I agree that they are equal. Because we get that. We do get that. Hey, it's 106 miles to Chicago. Do the line. Do the line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. And then we do it.
Dance monkey.
Yes. Yeah. And we do. We've established we don't dance.
Yes.
We do not
walk
dance.
Funny,
we hop around.
In unison.
Silly walk.
Be monkey. Bizarre.
How bizarre.
Well, in that chase, they're all chasing them. And like you said, they do these amazing stunts. The stunts in this movie are... I mean, you put them on par with anything, and even action movies of today, you're watching these like Fast and the Furious and stuff like that. Half that stuff's not real. This is real mm-hmm. practical effects. That car is really going 118 miles an hour.
Yep.
They actually went back because it was so unsafe filming that they didn't want to have any pedestrians out. But then they thought people would think that they were speeding up the film. So mm-hmm. Landis went and put people out on Lower Wacker Drive as reference. So you could actually see that the Bluesmobile is indeed traveling that fast.
It's amazing.
But the big stunt and one of our favorite parts of the whole film is when car 55 goes into the back of the semi truck.
This is car 55.
We're in a truck. Like, I love that line, man. It's just so great. And Candy does it perfectly.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, who would do that? Why would you just heave a cop car into the back of a semi?
Because you can.
And it looks so terrible. Like, watching it the other day, I was like, man, that truck looks flimsy.
Yeah,
like, it looks so flimsy. It just crushed right through it.
And, like, so he wakes Jake up. He goes, hey, I got to pull off. And so he goes down the embankment, like, what would obviously where an exit would be on the interstate.
And then
but
everyone,
yet 18 cop cars behind them can't pull it off.
Well, it's because they don't know the angle, dude.
That's true. True.
Aykroyd or Elwood is a master driver.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the superhero car,
mm-hmm.
you know.
It's amazing. And then they're dropping cars out of planes and like this just goes on. And this is the kind of stuff. I mean, Christy and I do this show and like we always end up talking about these are the effects. I mean, it's just because we're old now. I don't know. But seeing these things, I still get a kick out of it. I just saw it for the first time 3 days ago. I'm 44. And it looks better to me than something that I know is fake that something's coming out today.
Damn right.
Hell yeah.
I can appreciate this like way better. It's amazing like what they did. Like Landis really had his hands full.
Oh, yeah.
He was directing. It was like he was directing three different movies at once and he did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to be able to corral Belushi into all of that, this tiny Tasmanian devil.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, is also, I mean, that's big. And the egos with all of the supporting cast.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He had a lot of people to keep happy and it seems like he did it for the most part. Where is Mr. T? I saw that Mr. T's in this somewhere.
What?
That's news to us.
Yeah.
He's on IMDb. It was in one of the he is in it and also Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is one of the dancers.
James Avery?
On the street. Yeah.
I think I read that somewhere. And then who's the dancer?
Joe Walsh,
yeah. The guitarist.
Joe Walsh is the famous he's credited. He's credited, but like people were like, wait, Joe Walsh was in that movie? He's the first prison mate to
the long
dance
blonde hair.
Yeah, dance.
I didn't know about the Mr. T thing.
Yeah, but
though. That's weird.
I would put him somewhere
in the prison
or in the crowd.
No,
scenes.
I wasn't making when,
like,
a joke.
No,
I
like in like the Maxwell Street scene where John Lee Hooker's playing somewhere there, or in like the Tail Feather scene where they're dancing in the thing. I'm glad you brought that up. That's we have homework.
I know it's another reason to watch it. Well, Mr. T's from I'll say this: Clubber Lang was from Chicago, so maybe it's him prepping for Rocky III.
Yeah, good. We could do that. I'll buy that.
So this is a prequel.
So he's doing his "Going to Fly Now" through the streets of South Chicago
to Tail Feather.
Yeah, to get ready to fight Rocky.
Yeah. To the sounds of Shake a Tail Feather.
So they go to the municipal building to bring this all to an end and the sign back
the
in 5
Daily
minutes.
Plaza,
back
right?
In five, yeah, the Honorable Richard Day Daily
Plaza.
Yeah,
that's where they got that Picasso.
That's right.
Yeah, they do say that, don't they?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. And it's another director. It's Spielberg.
There he is.
Spielberg.
He's pretty good. I mean, he's in it for very little, but he pulls it off.
Mm-hmm.
They're arrested and it ends with, like you said, Joe Walsh, one of the prisoners with them performing Jailhouse Rock, and you even get some of your famous musicians lending a line as they go through it.
Yes, they do.
Yep. Before we get to that, did you notice that when they're signing the receipt for the money that he writes down 1060 West Addison?
Does he?
Yeah.
I never noticed that.
Which is the address for Wrigley Field, which is mentioned in the film. But yeah, that's on the receipt when he hands over the five grand.
Good job, Dan.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of little things like they I guess Landis always puts this fake movie poster, this fake horror movie.
See you next Wednesday.
See you next Wednesday.
Yeah. So I guess there's a lot of little things like this for people who watch this a lot, and I definitely will watch it again.
Did you see it?
I saw it, yeah.
Okay.
It's like a billboard as they're driving past. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff will bring people back again. The people that want to see the little, I don't know. I mean, this was before Easter eggs, but really they were, that's what they were.
Mm-hmm.
John Landis invented Easter eggs.
And he's not a rabbit at all.
Yeah, maybe not. Now, that's about the end. What have I missed? I'm sure there's things that I've glossed over that need to be addressed. What have I missed?
Stephen Bishop's in this movie.
Yeah, he's in a lot of Landis's films, too.
I love Stephen Bishop. Yeah.
On and on.
I have a whole Pandora station that I turn on. Just Stephen Bishop station.
As far as plot points or anything like that, or iconic scenes.
You broke my watch.
Yeah, they broke my watch.
There's so many iconic lines in the film.
That was apparently, and I don't know how well you can hear all of them, and I don't. Maybe it's just, it is bullshit, but apparently after every tremendous car accident, there is someone uttering, oh, they broke my watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can hear the one cop, especially the crash that Candy's in with the two cops. Yeah. He says it.
So,
I got to watch it again and see Steven Spielberg.
You missed him at
he's
the end?
The very end. Yeah, he's eating a sandwich.
I got it. Like, so you have the mall scene, which was just over the top and glorious, but they actually drive the Bluesmobile through two plain glass windows in at the Richard J. Daley Plaza as well,
mm-hmm.
but right before the Bluesmobile like crumbles apart,
like a Looney Tunes car.
Yeah, yeah, it's sweet. So they even when they're in like the middle of the business center of downtown Chicago, they're still just terrorizing things.
Yeah, why wouldn't they?
It's like a glass magnet.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, with that then, I guess we're ready to give our reviews. So for Christy and I, it'll be a single review out of 5 stars, but then we'll get to the fellas. And I'm really mostly anxious to hear what they think, their initial viewing versus their viewing for this show. So Christy, what do you think? How does Blues Brothers hold up for you?
I think in being a love letter, it's an amazing... You can tell when somebody just really loves a subject, and you can tell Landis loves the subject, and he plays it out perfectly in each scene. I'm going to say probably like a 3.5.
That's exactly what I was going to say as well. And it's mainly for me, because I said I love this kind of music. I think they're just cool. I don't know that I was even like, it's one of these movies, like you said, you don't know how to categorize it. I don't know what I'm really... how much I'm supposed to be laughing, because I wasn't laughing that much, but there wasn't a second that I didn't think they were cool, because they're badass like the whole movie.
That's such a great statement.
They're just cool.
They're just cool.
They're just cool. And the music is what really puts it over the top for me. The music is world class, and I appreciate the stunts and that kind of stuff. So I was going to say a 3.5 as well, which is pretty good for seeing it, you know, not having seen it at all after all this time. We have no background with it whatsoever. Now, you guys, let's start with you, Dan. What do you think then versus now?
Not much has changed. The first time I saw it, it really was an all around great movie, because like we've discussed, it has something of everything that you want. And I wanted everything. And so all of the songs I adored, I loved the performances of them. The spectacle of it was great. The stunts and stuff like that. I will totally give it a 5 from the first time I saw it.
Mm-hmm. And what about today? It still holds up with a 5.
It still holds up with a 5. No doubt.
Alrighty. How about you, Hampton?
5 thumbs up. I have 5 whole thumbs up for both. Pretty much exactly what Dan said. I don't know that it just holds up for me, though. I think it's still, especially with viewing it with my kid, like it's still, and with you two, it's a movie that is still fresh for people that haven't seen it. And for a movie that's that old, to be able to do that, I mean, through the music, through the directing, through how it's performed and the seriousness that it takes to make a classic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think is why it holds up. Still 5. 5 and 5.
Cool.
5 and 5. All right. Well, I think it's safe to say then that based on the four of us, the Blues Brothers, still holds up today.
Most certainly.
Hell yeah.
Nice. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of The Great 80s, The Great 80s Movie Debate. If you have a moment, go over to neozez.com where you can find podcasts on all kinds of different things. We have an in-character series on several different topics where we talk about the obscure characters in things like Star Wars, Seinfeld, Indiana Jones, The Simpsons. In addition to that, we have other podcasts on a variety of different things. Halloween Horror Nights is coming up down at Universal Studios, and Matt does a very comprehensive podcast about just that. So chances are, if you like something, we like it too, and we've podcasted about it. This conversation will continue on another show that we have called The Best of Fives, where we will be counting up our best five iconic movie songs. So please head over to The Best of Fives next week to hear the continuation of this conversation and find lists on all kinds of other things as well. I'd like to thank you, Dan and Hampton, for joining us. It's been a thin slice of heaven.
Hey, thank you.
I'm a fat slice of hell. Yeah. But thank you.
That's such an accurate description of you.
I legitimately am a fat slice of hell.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
I finally agree with you.
That's why I said it.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Come on, baby, don't you want to go? Come on, baby, don't you want to go? Back to that same old place, my sweet home, Chicago.
Well, 1-1 is 2, 6-2 is 8. Come on up, baby, don't you make me lay hot. Hey,
baby, don't you wanna go back to that same old place, sweet home, Chicago.